we like to think that there's a straight line and life isn't usually like that, right? So looking back, I can see how all the dots are connected, but at the time, it didn't always feel like all the dots were connecting at all.
Welcome to The Road to Mindset. My name is Steve Didier, and today we are going to have a very enlightening conversation, I'm sure, with Michelle from Michelle Coaches. Welcome to the show, Michelle. How are you doing?
I'm great. It's so great to connect with you here from across the world.
Yes, yes, because you are in Colorado. So we're
I am.
Been 11 here hours apart, 12 hours apart, something.
Yeah, something. It's 9 a.m. here, and you're in the middle of the night or almost.
Past yeah, I'm a little after 10.
Okay. Yeah, been here my whole adult life, and I like to travel a lot, but I always come home.
Yeah, it's good to have a home base. Right now, I am essentially homeless, and you know, it's fun, but I can already kind of feel that. Okay, hey, any place to home base, you know, kind of return right. to and branch out from. But maybe I'll find that place while I'm here. Who knows?
Maybe.
Never know. I do love Southeast Asia a lot, and I've got all of downtown Saigon in my background.
So, it's fantastic. I've never been. I've been to China. I've been to China. That's it. I had to think for a minute. My husband's been to Thailand a few times, but I loved it. I want to explore more.
It's amazing. I've spent some time here now, and obviously the cost of living is just absolutely fantastic. If you're earning money in American dollars and spending in Vietnamese dong, you are way ahead of the game,
right?
Financially. I don't know if you can see it, but there's the tallest building in Vietnam is right there. It's Landmark 81. Mm. It's I think like I don't know the 10th tallest building in Asia or something. It's a big one. And I had dinner there the other night at a restaurant on the 77th floor, steakhouse, absolutely like 5 stars. I can't remember the name of it, but set up so all the tables were right at the glass all the way around, had the most amazing view of the city, like absolutely awe-inspiring. Dinner, entrees, drinks, desserts, appetizers, salads, the whole bit for two people. It's like $62.
Yeah. I hear for, you know, Americans, especially, they flocked there during COVID or right before COVID, I think right before. And then some got trapped there during COVID. I've heard all kinds of stories, right? Mm-hmm. Good for Americans. It's interesting how the Vietnamese people and some of the people themselves can do better. But I hear it's amazing in terms of how far the dollar stretches.
Yeah, it's insane. Here, Cambodia, Thailand, the whole Southeast Asia is just...
Yeah.
It's really good. So, well, let's get into it. You know, we had a chance to chat a little bit before the show, and I know you're a serial entrepreneur. We have a lot of that in common. I was 5 years old in school finding things to sell and upgrade and find a margin in. So I understand that mentality. So kind of fill us in a little bit about your journey, because now you own several businesses, your publishing company, podcast. I mean, you're really branched out. And how did you go from that mindset as a kid and actually turn it into something tangible?
Yeah. You know, we like to think that there's a straight line and life isn't usually like that, right? So looking back, I can see how all the dots are connected. But at the time, it didn't always feel like all the dots were connecting at all. You know, I was in my 20s. I had a job. Luckily, I learned sales. I think that's one of the best skills any entrepreneur can have is learn some real good sales skills and not be afraid to talk to people and not be afraid to ask for the sale, ask for the money. We can go down that whole mindset rabbit hole, too, if you want. And so I just knew, though, that I was always cut out to do something on my own, to kind of branch out on my own, find my own way. And so in my mid-20s, I branched out and opened basically an office supply store, way back in the day. That's how I started. But I had lots of businesses in the last 40 years, some successful, some not so. But here's the thing that is sort of the umbrella, if I can go down this for a minute, because I think we all have it. And you and I talked offline as you said, for a minute, even those of us who seemingly have lots of things going on, have side hustles, have different businesses, seem to job hop, have an umbrella, what I would call an umbrella purpose that sort of directs our life throughout our whole lifetime, that when we look back, we can connect the dots. And for me, even in my first business, I was always coaching. I was coaching team. I was coaching clients. I was coaching people around me. And so when I look back, I can see that that's been the theme through all my businesses, through my life. And so, of course, it makes sense that I end up as a coach. I coach other coaches. I coach people on how to really set themselves up as an expert in their field. And I was doing that back in my 20s.
Wow. Okay.
Back then I was just called marketing. I help people market, right? But it's the same thing, because you have to dig in and find out, what did they stand for? What is it they're marketing? How are they going to present themselves out into the out to their prospective client?
Right. Which we all kind of know is branding. Now that's the catchy current term. So was your first job, was that a sales job?
It was. I was selling office supplies over the phone, cold call over the phone. I mean, I had jobs like in school and whatnot that were different, right? I did door-to-door sales when I was a teenager, like door knocking. And but yeah, I did telemarketing was my first job. I actually, so here I'm going to date myself. I sold disc packs. Like, people don't even know what the heck that is. They were big platters that you put into computers. And I sold those to corporations cold calling. It's like people have heard of like a floppy disk maybe, or a 3.5-inch disk. This is way before that. These are big disc platters that sold for hundreds and thousands of dollars. And I cold called and sold those. But like I said, most people don't even remember the term, even people my age. It's pretty obscure.
Yeah, that was a while ago. I remember. I'm 51. So yeah, I remember. Now that explains why you opened up office supply store.
Right.
Wow. Yeah, see, I could connect the dots too once I see that.
Yeah, yeah. So I had experience and I was doing laser cartridges and laser printers, and that was the whole new thing at the time. And so I went from selling disc packs to another company selling office supplies, basically. And again, I was cold calling companies. So I learned sales. I think that's important. It's important for mindset for anybody who wants to be an entrepreneur or really make their way in the world. Sales is a really interesting skill to learn.
I think it's a critical skill if you want to own your own business. And if people have that mindset or that attitude of like, I don't like sales, I'm like, don't even bother, because you are going to need to sell 100%. And sales is one of those skills that you carry with you. If something happens, you can get a sales job and start making good money immediately.
I think people get freaked out about sales because they think they're being pushy. And really, sales is again, mindset, right? It's all about how we approach something. It is, how are you connecting with people who need what you have? That's really all it is, right? You're not going to sell something to someone who doesn't need what you have. Like, that's not going to happen. If they buy it, they're going to return it, right? So don't go down that rabbit hole. Be really clear about what you have to offer, why other people need it, what it is, what the value is, what the benefits and features and all those things, right? And then find those people and sell to them.
And help them. Yeah, that's the thing. People don't understand, you know, they have this weird, you know, this image, like the old school pushy car salesman who's trying to screw people over. And that is so not what sales is. And I've watched over the years, because my first exposure to sales was when I was, I'd have to say, about 18 or 19 years old. I was actually selling cars, but specifically repairable cars. When cars get into accidents and they get them from the insurance company, there's a market to sell those to people, guys who have, you know, great auto body skills or stuff like that. They fix them up and then they sell them, you know, they create that profit there. So that was my first exposure to sales and really how to consult with people, find out what their needs is, and see what if what I had could match what their needs were. Incidentally, that was also my first real exposure to personal development.
Right.
Which is usually how it goes.
Right. You've got to, in order to sell, you've got to be confident, you have to be brave, and usually you got to do some pretty intense up-leveling and internally. And so personal development just comes with it, right?
Yep. It's part and parcel of the sales industry, which is good overall. And, you know, I remember, Brian Tracy's. He had a very comprehensive sales course.
Yep.
Back then. And that.
Yep. So you may not know, but I have coached many, many, many Brian Tracy book writing clients.
Really?
Yeah.
I did not know that, but that's pretty amazing. He was like, when, you know, further on in my life, I really got into sales when I got into real estate. And I was working bartending and working at nightclubs, working the door and stuff like that. And I was fighting Muay Thai and all these things in Las Vegas. And I was like, okay, I need to grow up. I can't live this lifestyle forever. So I turned to real estate, and you know, I grew up on a farm in central Minnesota. So I wasn't exposed to, you know, the conversations on how to make money, build wealth, sales. Those are concepts that just weren't discussed at our dinner table, you know. And when I got into real estate, I was like, okay, I really got to learn this. I got to go. So I went all in. But the first book that I read cover to cover was Brian Tracy. He wrote a book called Goals. Because I was like, I remember the sales thing from Brian Tracy. So I'm like, oh, that was good. Found that book, read it cover to cover, followed it to the T. I mean, you positive, present, personal tense, writing things down every day, you know, everything to the T. And I went in an industry that and you know, this is around 2000, that I'd never had no experience with, no connections, nothing. Went into it cold. And I set a goal for myself to make $20,000 in a month, which for me was stretching a lot. You know, growing up on a farm in central Minnesota in the 80s, you know, that's that kind of money is what you made a year, you know. So that was I was like, wow, this is a, you know, kind of almost intimidating goal. But I'm like, wow, if I could do this, I'm rich, you know. And the 6 month I was in real estate, I went over $20,000 in commission. So it works. And ever since then, I was like, well, that's, you know, those are the wins that you stack. And like, okay, this works. And I continued on this path. So we kind of got off on a tangent there. But yeah, sales and the personal development that comes with it is a critical skill for any entrepreneur, because I've carried that with me into every single business that I've done.
Right.
After.
Right.
And it's really.
I totally agree. And I think goal setting is different for different people and what that looks like. And, you know, as we mentioned earlier, you know, life gets in the way or changes course. And so sometimes you have to look at your goals and do they still make sense? And what does the outcome look like and so forth, right?
Yeah.
Goal setting, understanding what you want in life, how you're going to get there, the best way for you to get there is right. All part of success.
Understanding what you really want, I think, is important. But yeah. What you really want, not what your parents think you should have or what society thinks you have, but getting really true to yourself on what you want authentically, you. Mm-hmm. That takes some digging, I think.
Well, and it takes trial and error. Sometimes it takes, for some people, trying things on and seeing, oh, I don't actually really like being an entrepreneur, right? Or I really don't like 9-to-5, or actually some people actually really do. I know that's sort of not a concept people like hearing right now because it's all about nomad and being free, but actually right. Some people do really well with structure. We were talking offline for just a minute about the Army. You know, that sort of structure works really well for some people, or some similar structure where you follow, you know, a set time, you go to work, you come home. That's not a bad thing, right? You have discipline on your arm. That's not a bad thing. It's just what's going to work for you individually. Some people need more freedom. So don't try to fit into other people's expectations of what your goals should be, what you want in life. You want a job and to move up the ladder a corporate ladder, there is absolutely nothing wrong with that, right? It's gotten
No,
kind of
no.
a bad word, a bad vibe since COVID, but my gosh, we need people out there working, doing their jobs, right? I
We
have people that
do.
work for me in publishing. I need them. I need them to show up and do their jobs, right? Valuable parts of the team.
Valuable. And, I'll go a step further with that. A lot of people kind of crap all over blue collar type jobs these days as
Right.
well. And, growing up where I did in central Minnesota, a lot of my friends are blue collar. A couple of them, one of my best friends from Minnesota, he owns a construction company now, but these guys are making a ton of money.
Right.
They're
Right.
all in the six figures,
Right.
and you get people graduating now with these kind of weird degrees that have no real direction and no real employability, and they're complaining that they have these huge college debts and can't make any money. Well, you could pick up a hammer too.
So let's talk about mindset about for a minute too, about what you want and what's realistic, because there's a gap there, right? And
Yes.
I'm gonna sound old. I know I'm gonna sound old here, but I part of this is understanding the opportunities that are put in front of you may not be what you want exactly today. But you're looking over a lifetime about how you're going to grow, what your long-term goals are. Do you want a family? Do you want to earn six figures or whatever the equivalent is? Do you want to travel? Like, what is it you want over a lifetime?
Right.
And then work on things that help bring you that and not worry about if it's exactly the right job or I don't want a hammer for a living. Okay, but is there an opportunity right now that you could move into owning your own construction business? Right. And I think our society has set ourselves up right now that we want everything now. We want it to be perfect now. We want the ideal job now. We want the money now. We want, our goals and we want it all now, now, now. And we forget we have a lifetime to achieve these things. We can't all travel the world in 1 year. Some people do. I've traveled a lot of the world over my lifetime. Right. And for me, that's more realistic. For you, you're doing a lot of traveling, living, the dream, as they say. right. And that's your real, that you're doing it. That's realistic for you. But everybody's got to find their own way here, and you don't have to do it all at once.
Exactly. And I think that, even I fell victim to that. When we're young, we don't understand how much time we have, barring some sort of incident, But, here at 51, I'm starting to realize that I got a long time left in the game. I'm only now really starting to grasp like that we gotta play the long game. It's not
You
that,
got to
and
play
I
the
think
long game.
it's gotta play the long game, and especially with the advent of social media, and I'm gonna sound old, but that has accelerated that sort of microwave mentality of I want things now, 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 now. And I think people really need to take a step back and realize, like, you got so much time.
I also think I see some people who have quit their job and then been surprised that they haven't replaced that income in 3 months. Doing some online business, right? Because there's also the myth of passive income. There's the, and I know that you also sell online courses and online products and whatnot. I'm sure there was nothing passive about that when you set all that up, right?
No,
You need
no, no.
expertise, you need to understand digital marketing, you need to understand, commerce and how to set all that up. There's nothing passive out there. What you want is something that feels exciting. So it feel so it's passionate to you, but there's no passive in the world about anything.
No. You can set up, if you set it up right, you could have stuff that kind of pays you, but it's never truly passive. Because, yeah, when I set up those courses, I had no idea how to structure a course. I
Right.
had no idea. Like, I didn't know what to anything. Okay, what do I say in the videos? Okay, how do I set it up in chat? How to do the downloads? All the nitty-gritty with the back end and the sales funny. And okay, well, which do I do, Kajabi or ClickFunnels or go high level? There's just so many things. It was at times that I don't want to say it was overwhelming, but there's times where I was just like, man, I don't, I've bit off a lot, so.
Right. But, and now it looks passive, and it looks passive until the shopping cart breaks and you have to go figure out what the heck happened, or something upgrades, or internet goes down, or, it's all this back end stuff that people don't always understand that you still have to like watch it, right?
Yeah, and you have, might have a
Real
customer that has the
estate.
problems, or maybe you get a charge back and you got to deal with that and put together the
Right.
disputes. There's a lot of stuff. There's a lot
Right.
of stuff. But
Real
that.
estate's not passive, right? You got to pay taxes, make sure you're upkeeping. So, I love the idea that all these are ways to make money. I don't like the idea that is perpetuated out there right now that anybody can, make $1 million in 3 months if you have the right mindset. That's kind of, there's a gap there about. And I believe in miracles. I
Of
do. And I
course.
believe all kind, but I also believe that you do some preparation, whether that looks like hard work or internal up-leveling or skill set or whatever that is. And then opportunities come and you follow through on opportunities, and some will be massive and some will be small. And, not to beat yourself up when you haven't earned $1 million in that first 3 months after you quit your job.
Right. Or even don't beat yourself up when you haven't earned anything in that 3 months. Because that's one of the things that keeps when I have conversations with people about, especially about their early entrepreneurial journey, is that the mindset and the characteristic of resilience. Because you're gonna take your lumps. And there's all these stories out. Oh yeah, you can. There's people out there set up a course and hit and made $1 million in 3 months. But the exception does not disprove the rule. And the rule is, you've got to bust your ass. You've got to become an expert in your field. You have to put in the work. You have to put in the sleepless nights. And you're not going to get it any other way.
And the key is to find something that you're passionate about to hold you so that you can be resilient and not to take it personally when the lumps come. Because it's, I mean, yeah, you may need to learn some skill. You may need to listen to your clients. If something goes wrong, you get lots of chargebacks. But it's not about your worth in the world, right? It's not about, am I worthy to be alive on this planet? No. And what happens is sometimes we get a client who says, I want my money back. And then we take it really personally. And it's not about us. It's never about us.
Never is. It's a numbers game. There's going to be a certain amount of clients that just want their money back no matter what.
And that's just an opportunity for us to polish our product, get better at selling, find the right matches of who wants to buy, up-leveling our game so we don't take it personally, understand that we can go to the next level. Our client who wants their money back goes to the next level, so forth.
Yeah, exactly. So let me, we talked a lot about the general entrepreneurial journey. But you might be able to speak on something I can't, which is the journey of the female entrepreneur versus the male. Is there, did you find, I mean, obviously you've been doing this a long time and things have changed a lot in the last 40 years.
Right.
But do you find that you have to address certain specific issues or problems as a female entrepreneur?
I'm sure I do, but it's so ingrained in me that the things that are different is I was the one, so my husband worked, I've been married a long time. I was the one that took my kid to school, picked my kid up from school, and I chose to do that, right?
Right.
So I was the primary person to do all of that. And so that does change a little bit. And today's society is different, right? But being a mom generally means you have more skin in the game with your family as well as being an
Right.
entrepreneur. So even though my daughter kind of still says she remembers it differently, I tried to work mostly when she was at school.
Right.
And maybe a little bit more at night or early in the morning. She thinks, I worked all the time, but I didn't. I picked her up from school every day, right?
Right.
Those kinds of things makes being a woman a little different. We tend to be caregivers for our family. Obviously, I'm making big generalizations. That tends to still be true. So, my parents, my family, all of that. When somebody's sick in the house, it's usually the women that are keep going and power through, sometimes men as well. But You know,
Men are babies when we're sick. Men
are
babies.
I don't want to get hate
Come
mail.
on.
Men are babies. Yeah.
We are.
Don't send either of us hate mail. You know, women, like, you know, live through childbirth and cramps and all kinds of things. And sometimes men get, you know, a runny nose and go to bed. So, oh, yeah. But again, yeah. Don't send me hate mail on that. But no. Generally, as a woman entrepreneur, we think about those things and we have to take that into account. That also makes me more empathetic to other women that work with me and on my team.
Right. And
I think that makes me a better boss, and it's a challenge sometimes, but our society's changing where the whole workplace is becoming more flexible now, right?
Yeah.
Especially since COVID. But I've, you know, as you mentioned, I've been doing this a long time, so I've always had this flexible workplace. If you need to leave, leave. When my husband was working full time, they did not have that at all in his workplace. Like, there was no flexibility, right?
Yeah.
You can't just take off in the middle of the day because your kid's sick, you know, yeah. Suck it up and deal with it. That whole culture has changed a lot in the last 5 years.
Yeah.
And, yeah. You know, I like to think that I've been ahead of that curve a little bit, but I think as a woman, it makes me more empathetic and open to that culture change too.
Yeah. I think that, you know, I've seen a lot of that culture change, and there's some definite, some good aspects to it, but there's been some negative outcomes to it as well. I see a lot of people being very entitled, like, they have no concept of, okay, what can I do for the company? It's all like me. I don't really want to have to work that much. But I want this, and I want this, and I want this, and I want this, and I want a salary that's commensurate with 20 years experience, even though I'm just starting and never done it before. You know, there's kind of been a, it's a change. And I think a lot of it has been for the positive, but there's been some other aspects of it that I'm just like, head scratcher. I'm like,
It's hard to put together a culture. I think it's difficult to have a team culture where staff and team feels like they're part of a bigger purpose and they want to work and they're excited to show up. That's not an easy thing to pull together. I believe we have it right now on our team. I've not always had it. And sometimes you get one person on the team that just pulls the whole team down, and then you have to make hard decisions, you know, about letting people go. That we have that right now. And that's not because of me. That's because of someone on my team in their 20s who works hard to pull that together for the whole team, right?
Oh, wow.
That's so she took that upon herself to make sure that that happens. And it's amazing. And it's great. And she does all the virtual parties and all kinds of stuff, right, to pull
that's team so
together.
Cool.
But I think that's part of it. If people don't want to just go work for a paycheck anymore, they want to feel like they're making a difference in the world, that they're here for a purpose, that work matters, that there's meaning to their life, especially if they're giving, you know, 8 hours a day to it.
And I think a sense of belonging too. You mentioned that before, but I think that's very important. You know, being like they belong to and are contributing to something greater than just themselves.
Right.
And that's a, you know, that's a powerful feeling, you know, if you can get,
we
you
all
can,
want it.
Yeah.
And I think it used to come more from family.
Yeah.
I think, you know, generations before, and there's less of that in the family now. Some families obviously still have it. Right. But we don't have big extended families so much anymore. We don't have that sense of safety in family that we used to have. So people are looking for that belonging.
That's absolutely right. That sense of belonging or almost community with a little bit of extended family isn't as prevalent, especially in the United States. And that's something I see as I travel, because like here in Vietnam, family is your whole extended family. The kids are preparing to take care of their parents when they're older. I mean, it's just everything centers around the family,
mm-hmm.
which, you know, when you're in the U.S. for so long, but I haven't been in the U.S. that much in the last 10 years. I spent about 6 years in Mexico, and I've been other places. But in Mexico, family, the family unit is still very, very strong.
Right. I hire, so I have a lot of US-based people on my team and some here in our physical office building, but I also hire people around the world and almost every other culture that I work with, I notice family is number one.
Yeah, without a doubt. Without a doubt. And that's, I think there's something to be said for that. I really do. You know,
Well,
I mean, I'm old school, but I don't think the I think the statistics would agree with me. You start looking at, you know, the statistics of children raised in single mother households as opposed to nuclear families, and the you know, 80% more likely to end up in prison. You know, all these numbers across the board, I think, kind of indicate that, you know, that family structure is valuable, especially for younger children as they're growing up.
Well, I want to take it a bit further because I think what we're really talking about though is extended family because in Thailand or Mexico, you know, there's plenty of single mothers, right? There's
Right.
plenty, but there's extended family. There's cousins, there's grandparents, there's aunts, there's uncles. So you have a whole support system. So it's not this nuclear family unit that we're used to in the US, right? It's
Right.
you can be a single mom, but it's like, where's the rest of your community? Where's
Right.
all the aunts and uncles, right?
It takes a
So
village, right?
it takes a bit, right? You know, my husband's a single child, my daughter's a single child, my neighbors, three of my neighbors all had single children, right? So there's no extended family anywhere for any of those kids.
Right. Yeah. Whereas here, if you in Vietnam, if you're a single mother, that kid or kids still going to have a lot of male influence, you know, like male figures in their life and other female figures because their aunts, their uncles, their grandfathers, you know, everybody is involved.
Right.
And yeah, that's a powerful thing.
We're definitely outside of my area of expertise here. I am just
I don't know how we
giving
got
my
on that,
opinion
but
at this
well,
point.
let's talk about your area of expertise, which is you coach a lot of coaches and people who are
I do.
looking to develop or expand their coaching business or start. Well, specifically with coaches, there's a lot of people who are trying to get in, especially since the pandemic. A lot of people trying to get in to coaching.
Right.
And this is a personal pet peeve. I cannot stand the concept of a 19-year-old life coach.
Right.
You haven't lived
Right.
life. You have
Right.
no business coaching me if you haven't lived. But
Right.
aside from my own personal pet peeves on that, if somebody's looking in to get into coaching, whatever area it is, whether it's, you know, productivity, maybe time management, mindset, whatever it might be, how would you guide them into getting into the industry?
Well, I think it depends. Like, why do you want to be a coach? What is your expertise? So, I don't have any team members 24 working for me, but I do have people in their 20s that work for us that coach our clients, but there's a specific methodology there. So we coach people how to write their book. There's a
Okay.
specific methodology they follow. They've been trained. It's not, they're just not just pulling it from their head. They're not a life coach, right?
Right. They have a
So
system.
there's a system, right, that they follow. And so I think we have to look at why do you want to be a coach? What is your expertise? You know, if you want to be a business coach, are you following a methodology like Brian Tracy has methodologies, Jack Canfield has, Tony Robbins? You know, are you following somebody's system? Have you been trained in that system so that when you get on the phone, you're not giving necessarily personal advice based on your life? Maybe you are, but there's a system you follow. So systems work, right? We know that systems work. It works, not for everybody. But when you find a system that works for you, stay with it and do it. So that's the first thing. What is it you're interested in? And then what do you have that's different and who wants that? Right? We're back to the marketing, we're back to the sales. You've got to figure out. I'm not a person that says, let's go find your avatar, right? And let's figure out who your perfect avatar is, because I work with all kinds of people. But there are similarities And there is a type of person that I work with. Yes, I work mostly with women in their 50s or 60s, but not only that, but I work with a type of person who has a yearning inside to do something bigger. So that's my avatar, right? And so you have to find what you have inside and then who needs what you have. And then, the third piece of that is, what are they going to pay for it? What's the value? What is your value? What are they going to see the value as? And then it's that whole business marketing piece about how do you set up a program, a service, a coaching system that you can actually sell. So I start though with what's your purpose and why are you doing what are you doing? And branch out from there. And then you have to figure out how are you going to find your clients? Are you going to, go to the local coffee shop and wave your hand? Are you going to go to the library? Are you going to get online? Are you going to be on LinkedIn? Are you going to do TikToks? Like, where do your people hang out? Are you going to go volunteer?
Right.
Right. Then you go to that next level.
Okay. And then you also assist people in developing their own personal system in their
Their
coaching
own
business?
system. I help them do their own system. We publish books and workbooks. So very often, just the process of writing your own workbook gets you super clear about who you are and what you have to offer, what makes you different, right?
I would
So
imagine.
that process is also an internal up leveling about who you are, how you want to present yourself out into the world. So sometimes we write a workbook together or a book to help that person be really clear about what it is they're offering out in the world.
Right.
And, so it might be a system. It's always some kind of system. It may be a system of three questions. It doesn't have to be a complicated system, but there's usually something there that you start with your clients
There's got to
with
be a
who.
framework. You can't just
Yeah.
shotgun and random approach it every time. You got to work it through a system. I'm a firm believer in systems,
Yeah.
whether it, whatever it is, sales systems or coaching system, what credit systems, everything, there has to be a structure to follow.
Yeah. There it is. And a lot of people don't realize that they already have the structure. They think, oh, I'm a life coach. I get on the phone and ask questions. Well, asking questions is part of your structure. Are you asking the same three questions every time? Is there an energy behind the questions? Are you looking for a specific answer? Like, there is a system there. They just don't realize they're following it sometimes.
Right. Yeah, they do have a system. Now with you, do you when you're taking on a coaching client, somebody who's looking to develop or build a coaching business, do you have an interview as part of your system? Do you have an interview with them to see if it's a correct fit for you?
So that's a great question. I used to do a lot more of that. By the
Right.
time someone finds me and they get on my calendar, they've usually self-identified pretty well. Like
Okay.
you look at me, I'm an old hippie. I got big earrings. You either get me or you don't, right? So right away, you're going to have a bunch of people look at me and say, she's not a fit. It's funny, I've been doing it so long that by the time someone gets on the call with me, it's usually a pretty good match. They've looked at my website, they get my vibe. They know who I am. Occasionally, we'll get on the call and it won't be a fit for whatever reason, right? But it's usually mutual. Like, yeah, I can't help you, or no, you're not the right coach for me. Again, it's not personal. So, but at the beginning, I did a lot more of that questionnaire and those kinds of things. But at this point, I think I've energetically put out there who's a good fit for me, and if you're them, come find me.
Right. Now, do you, I know you have a podcast as well.
I do. It's on hiatus right now, but I do have a.
Okay.
I've been podcasting since, again, I'm dating myself, 2008, I think, is when Blog Talk Radio came out, and I was
Get
doing
out.
podcasting on Blog Talk Radio.
You have got to be one of the OGs in the podcasting world then.
Yeah, right. And I do have, I've had talking books, I've had Purpose and Profit, I've had lots of podcasts over, however long that is, 20, I don't know, however long that is since
A long time. That's
2008. I can't do the math on the
yeah.
fly here.
Yeah, math isn't my thing.
But I'm on hiatus right now, and I'm here talking to you doing, you know, your podcast instead for a change.
Which I appreciate. That's been, now, did you, how long have you been on hiatus with your podcast?
I put out a season last year and I haven't done anything this year.
Oh, okay. So you structured that. Your system was season.
Yeah, I did a season last year. And I sometimes do author podcasts with my authors. I have a Grace Point Publishing is my publishing company, and we have a podcast over there. I'm getting ready to do a season on my podcast, Amplify, since you asked. I have a podcast called Amplify. I'm going to do a season on that about how to amplify your own personal branding.
Right.
How to get more leverage from that. I'm going to be doing 6 episodes by the end of the year. I'm structuring them right now.
Okay.
I'm not really doing a lot with podcasting personally right now. I have a podcast. I own a podcast production studio, though. If we're talking about entrepreneurship, yeah.
Yeah. What don't you do?
So, but see, it's all part of it because I do publishing, so I do audiobooks, right? So I needed a production studio, and then we do podcasting because I have a podcast, and my business partner has a podcast. And so then, you know, our audio production studio turned into also a podcast studio. And then we produce podcasts for some of our authors. And right. So it all fits.
Yeah. No. Yeah. They're all parallel. They all work together and add to the other.
Right.
So that's, did you get, when you were actively podcasting, was that a driver in terms of leads for your coaching business?
It was, and it kind of still is.
Yeah, I mean, amazing. Podcasts are evergreen because they're out there.
Right, they're out there. So more than anything, if you Google me, you just see I'm all over. I mean, you have to Google me. You can't, like, put in random words. But you Google me, you see I've been all over the place. There's some credibility there. It's like, oh, she's been around. Look, she's been a guest on this show, guest on Steve's show, guest on this other show, right? So there's some credibility there. She's had her own show. So that helps. And I think these days I don't know if this is really true. Like, someone has to see you 17 times before they buy. It used to be 3, just because of the noise out there. So I think the more you're out there these days talking about whatever your specific thing is, the better it is. So yes, all my old stuff brings me leads, but I think it's more that people see me or hear me over and over again, and then eventually they'll connect.
Yeah, that does the credibility, just having your face, your name, all this different content out there lends a great deal to credibility, especially in the current internet culture.
Yeah.
And I think, you know, that's one thing, you know, you look at somebody like Gary Vee, he's always, you know, just content, content, content. And there's something to that, because when people search you and they find you and they see you and you're popping up, you know, my personal YouTube has been on hiatus for a long time. I'm going to ramp that back up with the podcast and the more lifestyle stuff, you know, because I've been traveling. But, you know, I had people that I haven't seen in... I had a guy comment, old friend of mine, I was in the army with him, and we haven't kept in touch. I think we're friends on Facebook, but we don't interact. You know what I mean?
Yeah, right.
And somehow he must have come across one of my credit YouTube videos, because he commented on there. I was like, holy blast from the past, you know?
Right, right. Yeah.
So when you're out there, I don't think people really, I didn't understand how far the reach is. Even if you aren't getting a ton of interaction or engagement, people are seeing you.
Well, here's the way to look at it. How many times do you follow somebody else on social and never comment? Or maybe you occasionally like, but like, if I get 100 likes on something, I'm not going back and looking at every single person on every post about who liked it. Sometimes I do, sometimes I don't. Sometimes I like a post specifically because I want to see what else is happening with that person, and I know it'll pull the algorithm into thinking I'm interested, which I am, right? But just turn it around. How often do you see someone else's thing on Facebook or Instagram or wherever and go, oh, that's interesting, but you don't interact? And then they come up again in your feed a week later, a month later, and you go, oh, yeah, I saw them last month. And but you don't interact, but you're paying attention, right? I mean, we do the same thing. So why do we expect that everybody who's watching us is supposed to leave a comment? It doesn't always work that way.
Oh, so it's a little arrogant to think that, isn't
Right.
it? You know, I had a YouTube channel. I moved to Mexico for the first time in 2013.
Where'd you go? I want to know because you mentioned it a couple times.
Playa del Carmen.
Okay, that was different back then.
Yeah, it was a lot different, and you know, it was a little over 10 years ago when I moved there. And I drove down, two suitcases, my dog. We left Las Vegas and we
Yep.
drove down to Playa. And it was really frustrating for me when I was trying to do research online and you know figure out different things like how do I get my car licensed or what's the process for that? What do I have to do to bring a dog into the country? You know, all of
Right.
these different things, you know, what's the internet like in Playa del Carmen? You know, all these different things. So I started a YouTube channel and I didn't know what I had because I had it monetized like boom, quick. Couple hundred bucks a month, I was like, whatever. I didn't really pay attention to it. But all I was doing is answering questions that I had when I was in the research phase.
Right.
Horrible lighting, horrible audio, no editing, absolute garbage in terms of production. But I was giving good value from somebody with their boots on the ground. And Playa del Carmen is a pretty small town, as you seem to be pretty
Yeah.
familiar with it. Okay.
Well, I've been there. Yeah.
Okay. There was probably a 6 to 9 month stretch. I couldn't walk around the town no more than a week without somebody I didn't know stopping me in the streets and being, oh my God, you're that guy from YouTube. Or, you know, oh, you're the guy from YouTube. Oh man, you changed my life. I was kind of 50-50. I wanted to move down here, but I didn't really know. He's like, but your YouTube channel made me pull the trigger. And
Wow.
it blew my mind. One guy introduced me to his kid. I was walking to the gym. He's like, hey. I'm like, what's going on? He's like, you're Steve from YouTube. I'm like, yeah. He's like, oh, do you have a second? I want to introduce you to my son. And then he ran over and he grabbed his kid, about 8 or 9 years old, and he was like, remember we watched his videos? And the kid's like, oh my God, you're Steve.
You're
Oh, I was like,
famous, right?
I was even telling a friend of mine this because I was like in awe. I'm like, you know, what the heck? You know, I didn't realize. And we were sitting at a coffee shop there, and I was telling him about it, and he's like, shut up, you know. And
YouTube
then,
famous before it was a thing.
yeah, and not five. We passed that part of the conversation. We're talking about something else. But it's about 5 minutes later, and there was a couple sitting next to us, and the guy stood up and he came over. He's like, hey guys, I'm sorry, I don't mean to interrupt, but you got that YouTube channel, The Mexico Minute, right? I was like, and my friend is like, no, you paid him. You paid him. But you know, I didn't realize that. I didn't even comprehend if I had kept that up, that channel would be huge right now, because getting in at YouTube back in 2013
Right.
and it got monetized like that. And you know, I had, you know, I think I still have almost 6,000 subscribers, and I haven't done anything with it for 11 or 9, 10 years, something like that.
Right.
So it's funny, you know, I would get comments, but that just goes to show there are people watching and you do have an effect and they do pay attention.
Right. And you never know. I have people that contact me, say, oh, I've been following you for years.
See, that's amazing. That's amazing. I think a lot of people get frustrated when they start putting out content and they don't see an immediate return.
Well, we're back to, we're going full circle
It
here,
always
right?
comes full circle, doesn't
Yeah.
it?
Longevity, being it for the long haul, practice, get better at what you do, keep going, get out of bed every day. That's the first step, right? Especially some of our younger generations, have a hard time with that some days. It's a lot of anxiety on the planet right now.
Yeah, there really is. What do you recommend in terms of dealing with that kind of anxiety and with everything that's going on right now?
So I'm not a therapist. I'm not a doctor. I do have a couple teenagers in my house.
That probably makes you more qualified.
I would say the only resources we have for this world that we're faced with right now is internal creativity, ingenuity, intuition, spiritual guidance, whatever that means for you.
That's very individual, but necessary.
And resilience, right? I mean, math and English is going to help you, but I don't think it's really going to take us where we need to go on the planet. I think it's critical thinking. And the only way to discern if you're doing your own critical thinking or being brainwashed is by making sure that you're cultivating your own creativity, your own intuition, your own internal guidance system.
That's so that, hugely that's, important.
That's where I think we all need to go. And I think that's what's going to help our younger generations get out of anxiety, because they have to learn how to tune out all that noise that's all they've heard their whole life. Like, I grew up without all that noise, so did you. Mm-hmm. But that's all they've had is the phone and the noise out there, and access to information about wars that I didn't have access to 24/7 every minute, right?
Right.
And so you got to cultivate some inner strengthening to be able to deal, and then, you know, go hug a tree, get outside.
Yep. Well, that's, I would absolutely expect the tree hugging, because from a self-possessed hippie.
Yeah.
How much, right. Be honest, how much time do you spend in Manitou Springs?
I don't spend that much time in Manitou Springs. Colorado Springs is just as cool, but I love Manitou Springs.
It is. It's a cool spot.
So if you're talking about the pot thing, so Manitou is like pot legal. I am like an old hippie. I've been there, done that, self-developed. Don't need any of that, but it's totally legal in Colorado.
Completely legal in Colorado. That actually wasn't what I was referring to, though. But isn't Manitou Springs supposed to be some sort of very specific energy divergence? There's supposed to be some sort of natural power there.
Well, I think it's our mountain, Pikes Peak, and that's Colorado Springs as well.
Yeah,
I think our mountain is very... I do believe it's an energy portal. I think so. Now we're going down the woo route, but Colorado Springs has a lot of religious organizations here.
Yeah.
And back in the '80s, it was kind of known for that. All the Christian organizations, they're all still here. I believe a lot of people were drawn here because of the spiritual energy. So
that seems to be what my first impressions of Colorado Springs were somewhat different, because I was ended up on Fort Carson.
Right. So right.
There was, when I was communing with nature, it was a completely different way. Pinyon Canyon and freezing our butts off and blowing things up. But it was a good time. I really did enjoy Colorado Springs. I did.
Well, maybe someday on your travels, you'll come back, or I'll end up in your part of the world.
Hey, you know, I have been meaning, I actually drove through Colorado. I went from earlier this year, I went from Mexico to Texas, and I drove from Texas all the way to Phoenix and then Vegas. And then I drove through Colorado up to Minnesota, where my parents are. And I was going to stop in. I spent a little time in Vail, but I didn't really spend any time on Springs. But I, you know, the mountains were just, it's when you haven't been there for a while and then you see them again, you're just like, wow.
Yeah, beautiful. It's beautiful. Colorado's really beautiful.
It's absolutely stunning. So, well, hey, we'll call this for this particular time, but I really appreciate some of the insights that you gave on that, especially on the coaching and
hanging out, right?
Yeah. Yeah. Those are the best kinds of conversations. Those are the best kinds of conversations. But yeah, I really, you know, I think, even just for my own personal self, you know, I think there's a lot of really good value there. And especially when you're talking about the different coaching and, you know, different things like that. Cause I know when we talked really a bit before the show, you mentioned, you know, definitely writing a book, or if you haven't written a book, write a book. If you have a book written, publish it, as far as your personal brand. And I think that's a really, really strong advice.
It's always work on yourself, and then how are you going to put that out in the world? And a book is one way to do it. A podcast is the way to do it. And you're going to have both.
Cover it all. cover it all, YouTube and podcast and everything. So, well, thank you so much, Michelle. I really appreciate your time and being with us this morning or evening or wherever it is. If people want to find you, what's your socials? Where should they go to find you?
Head over to michellecoaches.com. You'll see my Facebook group. You can text me from there. You can email me. You can book a call. That's the easiest way. It's like my little link tree, michellecoaches.com.
Look her up.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.